Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. 6 months and what feels like an eternity ago, I interviewed author Maria Gudovich about her new book, Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. In the book, Gudovich takes us on a world tour of laboratories and clinical facilities working with dogs and their amazing sense of smell. She reported on dogs that help detect infections like Clostridium difficile in hospitals, dogs that can actually smell cancer in the human body before it's detectable on CAT scans, and dogs that companion with humans with chronic conditions ranging from diabetes to epilepsy to Parkinson's and more. I wound up turning the interview into a written piece for NPR's health blog, Shots, where it generated tremendous interest. For weeks, people wrote to me asking where they could find so-called doctor dogs and wondering if dogs could help with their or various other medical conditions. Naturally, as the novel coronavirus pandemic spread across the world, people understandably were perplexed by the difficulty in obtaining laboratory testing for COVID-19, leading many to wonder if dogs can be employed for this purpose also. Well, I reached out to Maria Gudovich again because she's been following the research on doctor dogs, and she's checked with the labs that she visited in researching her book. And it turns out that yes, there are several labs working on this very issue. Now, a big caveat here. While early research about dogs being able to detect novel coronavirus is going on and sounds promising, we're still a ways away from deploying dogs in clinical or public settings. One vision is that trained dogs could use their marvelous sniffers at airports or train stations to quickly detect who might carry virus and who is virus-free. But this is not yet ready for deployment. We present today's interview as simply coverage of work in progress, an element of hope to be sure amid all the gloomy news, but something uplifting. Maria Gudovich, author of Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine, is my guest again today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. She spoke to me from her writing office outside her home in San Francisco, California. Maria Gudovich, welcome back to Medical Monday. I want to start and just ask you how things are going. You are based in California, correct?
Yes, I'm in San Francisco, and we were the earliest adopter of the shelter-in-place, I believe, in the country as far as a metropolitan area. And we're doing okay in San Francisco. I mean, we definitely have our share of cases, and California is a mixed bag. But I feel like we flattened the curve a little bit, but we're waiting to see what happens if the mayor says we can reopen certain things and whatever the city decides to do. I think people are kind of champing at the bit to get back to life as normal a little bit, but to maintain safety, which is what's going on everywhere.
How have your routines been altered in terms of things like even walking the dog in Golden Gate Park or things like that?
Well, that's so funny you mentioned that. I actually walked my dog in Golden Gate Park today, and I have these very isolated trails, and this time, there are more people out because people are working from home, more little kids. So I encounter many more people on my walks. We live two blocks from a huge, beautiful beach called Ocean Beach. And there's usually nobody there. But now because of this, everybody is staying home and they're going to the beach. Now, we're not talking sunbathing. It's not that kind of a beach. It's usually a little bit chilly in San Francisco, but people taking exercise, and there's plenty of room for everybody, but it's just I'm used to everything being so quiet around here, and there are actually more people out, but generally people are wearing masks even outdoors, and I guess it's not necessarily necessary, but people are taking that precaution. And I just learned today that my brother-in-law has COVID. So he's in Los Angeles. He's only 25, I think. And
ooh.
Yeah, and he didn't say anything for a while because he didn't want to worry his mom. But he's rounding the bend, but he's young, and he had some pretty bad symptoms: the fever, tremors, and he still doesn't have a sense of he doesn't have an appetite and no sense of smell at this point either, or taste. So, and you know, that's worrisome that someone that young can and related can come down with it. It's the first time it's really hit home for me as far as someone I know personally. I know a doctor in New York who got this and recovered really quickly. So It's you never know, I guess.
Well, you did sort of anticipate my question, and I guess what I'm wondering is, with your brother, did he lose his sense of smell and taste prior to kind of getting sick, or was that all just part of it?
Yeah, again, this is news just coming in today, because it's my brother-in-law, and he's like 1,000 years younger than my husband. It's one of those families that just had a lot of kids and a couple of marriages, and I was just texting him, and he said, yeah, the first symptom was a loss of taste and smell. And then he got the fever and the he said uncontrollable tremors, I guess maybe from chills. And and he's just kind of coming around. He's going to recover, but it's still scary. He lives on his own in LA. He's an actor, and he doesn't know. He's a total germaphobe as well. He was one of those people who's super, super careful, and I don't know the details of if he was still working while the tail end was going on. He started the symptoms on April 25th. So it's been going on for a while.
Did he have problems getting tested?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think the family found out today, and he has 7 brothers and sisters, and all their husbands and wives. So we're all probably inundating him, and I just told him, look, don't worry about me. Answer other people's questions. So I don't know, but he did get tested. I don't think there's that much of a problem getting tested anymore in California. And, you know, I could drive across the city and get tested for any in San Francisco. I know it's different everywhere, but here, if you have any one of something like 15 or 20 symptoms, even just a headache, you can go get tested for free. If you have insurance, they'll try to, you know, get your insurance to pay for it. But it's a safe testing center outside. And, everything is routines here. I work from home, so I've been able to kind of, my life hasn't been altered dramatically like some people do, but we have our daughter living back at home, so it's not an empty nest anymore. So that changes the dynamic. But I just would sure like it if some four-legged friends that I wrote about in my book might be able to come to the rescue one of these days.
Yeah, so Maria, I have to say that since we did our last interview, which I think was maybe in November or even before that, mm-hmm. We wound up doing a sort of a transcript version for NPR. And I know you get a lot of fan mail, but I, even as just a journalist sort of covering that book and interviewing you, I get very plaintive emails saying, you know, Dear John, do you think that dogs could solve this problem? And I think, hey, I was just sort of interviewing somebody and writing about it. That's not something I really know about. But it led me to want to say to you, what do you think about this?
Right. Well, that was a great article, by the way. Thank you for putting it out there. It really got a lot of people to know about the abilities of dogs to be doctor dogs, which is the subject of my last book, Doctor Dogs. And it's about how they're sense of smell is so keen that they've been able to, in laboratory settings anyway, detect cancer at its earliest stages, some of the hardest to detect cancers. These are the things we talked about last time, but Parkinson's and in real people on a daily basis, they can sniff out their diabetic lows, upcoming seizures, and all kinds of things that we never really would associate with the fact that they have a smell. And as it turns out, in my book, I actually talked about the fact that dogs can detect viruses. They've been able to detect viruses. It's mostly bovine. It's, you know, a cattle thing. But that work is very well documented. They did a few papers on it. And so as soon as I learned about COVID, I thought, oh, okay, this might be something for dogs. Because in the book, I talk about, I wondered if they may be able to, if there is another epidemic somewhere, they may be able to stop it from becoming a pandemic by virtue of their noses, if they can be trained on the scent. Well, that ship sailed because it's now a pandemic. But the question is, can dogs somehow be part of the solution, part of getting back to normal, part of containing the disease? And they may be. Researchers around the world actually are looking at some of these studies just started, but they're going on around the world. The question now is, does the virus that causes COVID-19, the SARS virus, does that have a scent that dogs can detect? Now, viruses are a lot harder for dogs to smell by virtue of them being viruses, as opposed to something like bacteria. Dogs in Vancouver are working in hospitals and sniffing out bacteria, deadly bacteria, C. diff, in hospital settings. Now, that's a bacteria. has, believe me, I smelled the pure bacteria, and it is awful. So that's really easy to smell, but the viruses don't have, they're not as easy, so it's a little harder to train the dogs from what I'm understanding. But there are the best institutions around the world are starting to, the ones that work with dogs, medical detection dogs, and are affiliated with universities are really taking this question seriously. And several of these around the world are researching this now. They're in the early stages of the research. And like at University of Pennsylvania, they just announced, I think it was a week or so ago, that they're launching the study with eight dogs, eight Labrador Retrievers, and my dog Gus is a Labrador Retriever, so go Labs. And they're all trained, it's all reward-based, and they're keeping the dogs as safe as possible away from the contaminant. And they're doing, I think it's on sputum, and maybe urine, I can't remember what, but they've got they've got the sample of the COVID in the patient samples, and they're going to be testing positive and negative to make sure the dogs don't alert to falsely to a negative from like someone like me who hopefully is healthy. And if the dogs prove they can smell the virus in the laboratory setting, right now it seems like tests are becoming more readily available. The testing supplies are, so that's not really what they need the dogs for. It's more getting them out there, and like the dogs that you see at airports, the ones who sniff for bombs or drugs or cheese from a foreign country, they may be able to be deployed like that. So the next step, if they can detect the virus, is to see if dogs can detect people who have COVID-19, even asymptomatic people. And that's a big step. It's not just, oh, baby steps from the laboratory to that. And so that's a big question mark, being that dogs can tell when you're having low blood sugar, or when one young man I wrote about was going to have a paralysis episode. I think that they may well be able to do this. And with the kind of training that's done today, very positive training, very enthusiastic reward-based training, and they know the kinds of dogs to use are the ones that are really reward-driven and really want to work for that snack or that toy, that praise. And I think that there is a good chance that they may have some success. I have the initial results from a study going on somewhere where I'm not allowed to say anything about where it is or anything. I actually wrote an article about it last week, and just as I was about to hit publish on my website, actually, they asked me to hold off because they want to be able to announce it. But I will say that they started early with this study, and they completed 7 weeks, and the dogs were quite successful in detecting the virus in the laboratory setting. And the dogs and the big concern I'm hearing from people is, well, what, we don't want the dogs to get sick. Fortunately, it's very rare for dogs to be able to get this. There are only two or three that I know of, and if they do get it, they don't know if it's transmissible. There are many, many questions. But if the dogs in this study, they all came through fine. They're protected pretty well from the virus. Of course, they're still smelling it, but they're not getting their noses in. And, you know, as one of the researchers at the University of Pennsylvania told me, the people who are doing the testing at these test centers have a much higher chance of getting this than these dogs who are better protected in their own ways. So the dogs I'm talking about in this study had... it was about a 70% rate of accuracy of detecting the virus in the positive samples, and 89% accuracy in not detecting on the negative ones. So they're not false alerting to negative. So 70%, you know, if you're in school and you get a 70% on a test, that's not great. But for something like this, it answers the initial question. And I think their training methods and the way they did this seems to be pretty good science from what I can tell. It was all blind all the way around, so the person with the dog didn't know which sample. They're going around a scent wheel, it's called, and so the dog walks from one port to another on this low kind of wide wheel, and the dog will alert. So the person who's right there with them to reward them doesn't know until he or she hears in the ear yes or no, and so there's no clever Hans effect where the dog is looking to the person to say, you know, just for like a little eyebrow twitch or a little smile or something. That can't happen. So it seems like they did a good job, and that is really hopeful. And they are about to start the human testing portion of, and I don't know how that's going to go. And there are some places that are really good. They're able to take the samples of the COVID at University of Auburn. They have a really good canine center there, and they are able to render it sterile enough for the dogs to, if they got really close to it even, they'd be okay. So they have a method. They're the ones who have been doing the bovine research on viruses, so they've been able to do the sterilizing of it. So I think maybe others will catch on with that as well. So that's it in a nutshell for what's going on. It's really exciting, and what's interesting is that right now I have a deadline of tomorrow for the paperback edition of my book. Now I'm only supposed to be doing changes for proofreading, you know, if there was an error, a factual error, which I don't think there were any. No one said anything, and I've really, really tried to be accurate. So I asked, hey, is there any way we can get something about COVID in here? Because that wasn't part of our world when the book came out. And they're giving me 800 words at the very end of the book to write something. And it's a weird place to be because my book doesn't come out until October. And in October, this will be either a great success or a big failure. And so I have to go with that and really say that this, we don't know how this is going to turn out. But you know what, if I were a betting woman, I would say that I think the dogs have what it takes to do it.
Well, just like everything else with coronavirus, there's so much uncertainty. I mean, placing a bet on an October publication deadline seems like rife with uncertainty. And 800 words is so few when you're thinking about a book-length treatment. But I think as a betting woman who has written several books about dogs, you're probably right about that. Let me reintroduce you. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann, and we're talking with Maria Gadavage, who's author of a book called Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. And we spoke last year when the book came out, but we're talking to Maria again because of the latest research involving dogs possibly being able to sniff and detect novel coronavirus, a.k.a. COVID-19. And Maria, a couple of things I want to follow up on. One is you mentioned, and I was curious about this, we know of a few cases where dogs have indeed become infected with coronavirus, but is it that we don't think they get symptomatic? They don't suffer the illness that, like, for example, when they talk about this being a zoonosis, jumping from bats to humans, that bats, in fact, didn't get sick from this, but once it crossed over into the human population is when it caused major illness. So do we think that it, as best we know, it doesn't cause illness in dogs, or
well,
we just don't
know?
Well, no,
it can. It can cause one elderly dog, I think in Hong Kong, did pass away, but he or she had been isolated for a few weeks after discovering she had the coronavirus. I'm just saying she for some reason. And she did pass away, but she was 16 years old. The other dog, I believe in the same household, was okay. That they had sort of like sniffly nose and lethargy. There was a dog, and the only other reported case that I know of, at least, is a pug, I believe in North Carolina, recently was written about. And the pug was in a household of people who pretty much all had coronavirus. I think one or two of the adults were healthcare workers, a doctor or a nurse, and one of the children had it, and the dog ended up, I think, getting a little bit of a runny nose, and they had the dog tested, and the dog did test positive for coronavirus. Dog was fine after that. Now, pugs are notorious for having breathing issues anyway. I don't know if pugs might be, I don't think they're any more vulnerable to this, but the dog was in a very virus-filled situation. Now, we don't know. It's so early, but I've been keeping up with AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, news on this, and CDC. And so far, they're just saying, you know, don't worry so much. Cats seem to be getting some illness, as you know, from the tiger in New York City. And there are some cats, but everyone's saying, don't panic. It seems like they're not really passing it along. But dogs are my focus. And so far, three dogs that I know of in the world have been reported with this. By the time this airs, there may be another one, but it's not like it is. It's not like wildfire among dogs by any means. So that's hopeful. And yet, the question is, you've got a dog doing this research with the people, and the dog, it relies completely on the sense of smell for this work, and dogs, you know, best sense, of course, is their sense of smell. So if we don't know, maybe there are some dogs who are losing their sense of smell. We don't know. We can't ask them, and maybe there are ways to tell. But to have a working dog lose their sense of smell is not a good thing. It does seem to come back for most people, I guess, but we don't know how it affects dogs in that way. So that's something that they have to be really careful with, because that would... That's, you know, having a, like the military dogs I write about, the Secret Service dogs, if it turns out that it can affect the dog's sense of smell, then they've got to figure out something else to do, how to safeguard them. But at this point, the one study I told you about that was complete, the dogs all retained their sense of smell throughout, and they did a 2-week testing of it in the beginning before really immersing, and that was good, and that's hopeful. But there's so little we know about how this affects other animals.
Yeah, I mean, it would be obviously cruel. Hey, there's a good sound effects.
That's Gus.
Yeah, well, it would be a cruel irony for, of course, dogs to lose their sense of smell, given that in this instance, in this scientific instance, that's the sense, as you point out, we're relying on. Now, you pointed out that... these dogs in these early trials aren't necessarily going to be quote unquote useful for diagnosing COVID-19 in humans, but where they might be helpful is, say, screening travelers at airports. So right. Delineating someone who may be pre-symptomatic carrier, because we're simply, we imagine, not going to be able to test everybody that comes in through an airport. Now, it is kind of been shocking to see the travel industry just on its absolute knees. I mean, 90% fewer flyers.
Yep.
And, of course, lots of international travel, you know, totally curtailed or blocked. So at that greatly diminished load, it seems like if in fact this proof of concept were to bear fruit, that it could readily deploy some dogs in those environments to at least get started and try. I mean, it seems like at this point, anything we could do to try to stem the tide would be helpful.
Well, absolutely, and that's right. These proof of concept studies are going on around the world, and there, some of the people like at University of Pennsylvania say that the human portion of the trial could begin as early as July. Now it's July; they may be able to, if it proves successful with actually some of the research that they're doing behind the scenes, that they may be able to start deploying these dogs and seeing how they do with people in these settings. I don't know where they would go, but yes, of course, airports, any industry where there are a lot of people coming in and out, who knows, maybe by the time malls open up, they'll have a dog out there. And they'll, of course, all the other things that we're doing for safety with masks and social distancing will have to continue for a while, but dogs are just one addition to it. And, you know, I know someone who owns a bar, and he said, hell, if I can get a dog out here and make people feel safer, that would be great. So the idea is the dog will alert to someone, and hopefully even people who are asymptomatic. And if that dog alerts to someone, then they can't go to a place. They have to get tested before they can continue on. And in London, where they're doing this, at the UK, they have the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. They do really, really good work there. In fact, they're the ones who discovered that dogs can smell malaria. They were doing research and showed that they can smell malaria on the socks. They're researching what item of clothing they should use, and they use socks of children in the schools in Africa, and they could tell which socks came from the children with malaria versus which from children without malaria. So. And that's really hopeful, and they're doing this research. They're involved in the COVID research, and they're saying that the dogs could screen as many as 750 people an hour, each dog. I don't know. That seems really fast, but the dog, you know, you've seen the dogs at airports, and they just kind of go by a lot of people. So they're just going to be with a handler, and the handler will will be protected by whatever PPE, and it'll be, you know, just a quick check, and we'll see how that goes. But wouldn't that be amazing? It would be the best role of dogs. I write about how they've protected us in, you know, they protect people in the military, they save lives, they're there for their people, and they're fighting the bad guys. And in this case, they'd be doing the same thing, except with this virus. They're there in this bigger way than they would ever be with anything they've ever done before, military or medical, police work. This will be their biggest starring role yet as our best friends, as the heroes who save the day. If this, I mean, I'm sure they'd want to do this. It's just a matter of if they can and if we can work with them to communicate and to get this information from them. And actually, the end result from this, what the researchers really would like to have is some kind of technology that will take the place of the dogs, something that will learn from the dogs. As I talk in my book, the end result for the cancer research isn't to have dogs at, you know, cancer laboratories to test if someone is positive, but is to have a technology based on the dog's nose, based on what the dog is smelling. So for cancer, what are the volatile organic compounds? What is the scent? What are the combinations of scents that the dog is saying, yes, this is cancer, and no, this isn't? And is it different for each cancer? And same thing with COVID. Is it different in this different stages? So we have a lot to learn. But if the researchers, they're chemical analysts and physicists who are working with the scientists who are doing this, and they're using their GCMS, their chemical analysis techniques to see what it is the dogs are smelling. Is it this combination? And the dogs won't alert or will alert, and eventually maybe they'll come up with some kind of technology that can act as a screener and can do this rapid screening instead of having people and dogs. So that's the hope, that this will lead to that, but we're a long way from that. Although we may be seeing dogs as early as this summer, in test runs at places like airports. Who knows? That's the hope.
Well, the name of the book is Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. And it's by our guest today, Maria Gudovich. And Maria is currently working on updating the paperback edition, which will come out next October, with a small afterword about the possibilities that we've been discussing today about Dr. Dogs being able to detect novel coronavirus. Maria, thank you so much for coming back on the program.
Oh, it's been great. And let's keep our fingers crossed that the dogs can do this.
We will definitely keep our eyes peeled on this. Thanks so much for pointing us in this direction.
Thank you.
Hearing about Dr. Dogs really is uplifting for me, and I hope it is for you too. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Rigsby at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.